Today is the 21st of June, Parshas Balak, the Chumash class. So, because I travel a great deal, I see things that happen in the airport. And something that happened in an airport is related to what we're going to, the first thing that we're going to discuss. There are some times when you come to the airport and you are late and you wish to get ahead of the others in line. So this aggressive looking fellow asked everybody ahead of him if he could please go ahead because he was boarding in 15 minutes. Now anybody who knows anything about flying knows he would never make it. But the people were courteous, and behind me were a group of three traveling together. And this man finally got to the head of the line. He went through the machine, and then the TSA stopped him. You know, he was wearing a t-shirt and shorts. When I go, they always get my cufflinks around my stomach because they see the tzitzis. I'm always stopped. This fellow was wearing a t-shirt and shorts. And they stopped him. So now he was more late. So now what happened was is that the people who had let him go started laughing at him. Like, ha ha. Not directly at him. But I was feeling, well, I really feel bad for the guy. He finally got to the head of the line. It's really a question if he's going to make his flight. I was feeling empathy and pain for him. And these three, they were laughing. He's a middle-aged businessman. That's the introduction to today's first thought. In Pasuk 33 in chapter 22, Chaf Beis Lamed Gimel, there is a conversation between a malach and a donkey. There's a conversation between an angel and a donkey. And the donkey said, and the angel said, you didn't see me these three times? I would have killed you. At the end of the pasuk there. Ki ata gam oscha haragti v'osa chiyisi. So, on the words, I would have kept you alive, Rashi says that the donkey that spoke was killed. So, why was the donkey killed? Gentlemen, why was the donkey killed? What is the pshat that Rashi gives on why the donkey had to be killed? So Rashi says there that God has mercy. God is concerned on the kavod of the brios, on the honor of human beings. Because if this donkey had been allowed to live, what could happen later on? Anybody want to suggest what could happen later on? We have Mr. Ed. Oh, none of you are old enough to remember that, Mr. Ed. We have Mr. Ed, a talking donkey. So what would happen? Everybody would say, that's the donkey that spoke to the human being. That's the donkey that caused Bilam a problem. So the donkey was put to death so that he wouldn't feel bad. That was the donkey that tripped me up. That's what Rashi's saying. The reason why the donkey had to be killed is in order not to show up Bilam.
If this donkey had been created, it says Pikiobos, one of the special creations.
That's exactly where we're headed. And then Rashi gives another proof to this, saying that if a woman has physical intimate relations with an animal, so she gets punished, but the animal is also killed. What did the animal do?
Some people will point that animal.
So Rashi says, also because the people point the animal and says, this is the animal that the person sinned with. So in this sefer that is called Chidush HaLev, it is the Shmuzim of the Chafetz Chaim, Rosh Hashiva, Rav Henoch Leibowitz, Zichrono Livracha. He asks the question, how do we understand this concept that here Bilam was going to curse the Jewish people? He was going against the will of Hashem. He was a Rasha. He was a total person who was against everything that was good. The woman is doing something that is not in the pale of regular intimacy even. That's considered like off the path. A person sins, okay? God forbid I go to eat a cheeseburger. Okay, eat a cheeseburger, but isn't something that is off the pale. So I deserve to be punished. But there is a higher level of accountability for some of these actions. And yet we see that there's this concept that even though they brought on themselves this embarrassment, that there is a concern for their feelings. We are not going to allow the donkey to live, or the animal, which she had intimacy in public, wasn't even in private. So is this the person who we need to protect? The person is a Russia Gomer, so to speak. So after posing that question, he brings a famous medrash from a person whose name is Abba Cohen Bardala, who says the following, just as a side point to get the severity of what happened here with Bilam, and how do we bring the lesson down to ourselves. How are we possibly, he says, going to stand at Yom HaDin with any integrity? You see, this donkey died. This donkey could not withstand the tochacha, the reproof of the angel. He's inserting another idea here. How are we supposed to stand up? You see, the donkey, that's a donkey. Even though, as you said correctly, it was created for this purpose and it was given the Mr. Ed qualities to speak. How are we going to stand up at Yom HaDin? You see, the donkey couldn't stand up at Yom HaDin. The donkey couldn't stand up. So how are we going to stand up? We are thinking. We are talking. So the idea from Rabbi Abba Cohen Bardala, we'll get back to the original question in just a minute, is that if we think about our actions and use all types of prisms to keep ourselves doing the right thing, then we will be able to prevent ourselves from doing things that we shouldn't do. We're going to have to answer for this action. We're going to have to stand at Yom HaDin. If the donkey wasn't able to stand up, if the donkey wasn't able to withstand that Yom Hadin, so surely we won't be able to. Surely we, who know the things that we do, that need correction. So this is an inspiration for us to, so the donkey is an inspiration for us to see what's going to happen to us after 120 years. Now, returning to the earlier question, Rabbi Leibowitz then goes there to prove, because of this, that you see that even though the woman sinned a very serious sin, and even though Bilam was a Rasha, he was challenging the authority of Hashem. He was told not to go. He said, I'm going to go anyway. So, and he was a Rasha. He was trying to curse the beloved Jewish people. It was still a responsibility to be careful for his feelings. So I point this out today because we would like to believe that scrupulous and religious conduct comes along with scrupulous and religious conduct when it comes to others. And it does not always. And the message that we are getting here is that even a person who is a Rasha, there is a high level of concern for their feelings. And how we treat everybody makes a very big difference. And if this is how you have to be concerned for a Rasha, this is how you have to be concerned for the feelings of a person who the Torah publicly claims did something wrong, then certainly everybody else in their lives who is not like Bilam, we have a responsibility to have a high level of concern for their feelings. He goes on to say very, very, very strongly that from this he says that if there would have been a lack of respect for Bilam, so that's a lack of respect for everybody. So it's not accepting his actions. It's making sure not to embarrass him. That's why the donkey has to be taken away from the world. So these fellas who were walking in the line, probably not of the Jewish faith, so it's not nothing to talk to them about. But for us, how do we feel towards others? How do we act towards others? And I often see, because I deal with people, this week I was in 3 different states in a few days, that it is not always simple. It is usually easy to be courteous to people who we don't come into contact with all the time. It's the people we come into contact with all the time. Sometimes our families, sometimes other people. It happened to me this week that I actually got on the plane and there was not a lot of room for my stuff. And the person whom I was sitting next to, he got up and he moved his items and he seemed to be very nice. When the plane started to descend, the pilot said, we're going to land in 20 minutes. I was at the window seat, and I said, excuse me, I have to step out. He said to me, can you wait? I said, no. And Mr. Courteous had turned to Mr. Angry. With no reason. I was not rude, I was not loud, I was not anything out of line. I was sitting at the window, he was sitting at the aisle, and I saw how he changed. He got angry with me for having to step out. So that's only surface courtesy. The Rosh Yeshiva, I think, who was a paragon of being able to be respectful of others, is bringing out to us this lesson from the Torah, that the animal was killed so that Bilam should not be embarrassed. So the imperative on us to be careful on the kavod of others. So there's courtesy and there's kavod. Courtesy is when you say please and thank you. Kavod is when you honor somebody in the way that you treat them. And you hear it in the army, there's a code of honor. There's a code of honor. There's a code that I'm going to act in an honorable way. This person may be a Russia. I'm going to act in an honorable way. Because I realize that there is a part of my service to Hashem that is related to the way I treat others. And the level to which we need to be so careful. So I'm not giving anybody here any Musar. I'm really just talking to myself and trying to extract out of the Torah a lesson that is meaningful. Come into contact with so many people so often. Go to Wawa at the end of that street, Montgomery Avenue, and see. Try to pull in. I was waiting a few minutes. Three people took my spot. I was making a left turn. It was clear. I was making a left turn. Three people zoomed around me. So that's one thing. And the other is, how do we deal with others? People we come into contact with all the time. So sometimes their actions may qualify to be Rishoyim, but it doesn't give us any ability to not be concerned for the kavod of another person. And that is a very powerful lesson that we learn for us being able to interact with others. There are many people in the community who are paragons of this activity. There are many leaders in our community who are really paragons in the way they treat others and the way they are careful for the kavod of others. Rabbi Levine was giving a drasha when he was still the rabbi, and a 4-year-old child ascended the bima and starts to twirl on what was the banister. It was a banister. She twirled on the... She was a child in the school, I knew she was. And the shul is watching to see, what's Rabbi Levine going to do? Rabbi Levine gave out the candy in the shul. So he said to this child, did you come for a candy? In the middle of the drasha. Did you come for a candy? She said, yes. So he stopped the drasha. He went to his talis bag. And he gave her a candy. And she walked away. That's treating a person with derech eretz, a 4-year-old. It's the rabbi giving the speech. It's a tremendous lesson. For most people, probably bigger than the lesson of what the drasha was, of how the respected rabbi, experienced rabbi, stops the drasha to give a 4-year-old a candy. Chas on the kavod of another person. Being careful of their respect for somebody else. I may have mentioned that before here.
I think I was there present when that occurred.
You may have been there. It was a tremendous lesson. It just spoke so many volumes. And this is part of what this idea is. That we have the ability, with our words, with our actions, to either push up a person or to break them down. And there are so many opportunities. And Hashem should give us the strength, because we're all around each other. We're all around good people. So when you're around good people, it usually helps to be able to be reinforced in these areas. Any questions or comments on that idea before we move on to a different idea? Okay. So we have Rabbi Gamliel HaKohen Rabinovich, who speaks about another aspect of the Parsha, give us a different view, a different lens. And these are things that we can share, we can think about, we can make the Torah reading more meaningful for us when we have these ideas. So he tells a story just to begin with, just to get the idea going, that a person who crosses traffic in a place where they shouldn't cross traffic and the policeman stops them. Could never happen to me, but maybe it happened to you. Did actually happen to me at that Wawa. When I went down that little street and I made a left turn into the traffic and the policeman said, asked me for my license registration. He said to me, Mr. Levy, you live a few blocks away. You do not know that there's no left turn here? I said, officer, I had no idea that you're not allowed to make it. It was true. So he saw I was telling the truth, so he let me go. So he says here that a person sometimes claims, I didn't know. A person claims, I didn't know. I didn't know the rules. I didn't know you're not supposed to speak Lashon Hara in this time. I didn't know that this item wasn't kosher. I didn't know that I shouldn't say this. I didn't know I shouldn't do that. I didn't know. I didn't know the rules of Shabbos properly. I didn't know. So he says the very interesting idea. He says the person needs to, he says, we have to take a lesson from Bilam, and that Bilam was, it's called Nogea Bedover. So Nogea Bedover means that you are not arm's length. We are not arm's length from from ourselves, right? This case with Judge Seamus McCaffrey. So Judge McCaffrey's wife got some benefit. He's a traffic court judge. His name is used in the Philadelphia court system when they have to arrest people at the ballpark. I don't know why they have to arrest people. Maybe they drink, they have fights, they have other things that happens at the ballpark. I remember reading a few times that the judge, his name was Seamus McCaffrey. The name stuck with me. So for years I've been reading about him, and those are types of cases. If they arrest somebody, then they need to arraign them at a ballpark or something, Sunday nights, something late. It happens in front of him. So recently it came out that his wife got some payment, not illegal, but some type of a favor or some type of business deal in something that he was related to. So the question is, was he arm's length enough? It's his wife, he got a payment. Well, as we know, you know, these things are not simple. So Rabbi Gamliel HaKohen doesn't talk about Seamus McCaffrey, but he talks about our being arm's length with ourselves. We have to know what our negios are. What are our leanings? What do we generally like? People see it in food. Okay, food are leanings. Foods are preferences. So the same thing is, do we make decisions based on our own belief system? And he says that a person has to really, really look. The Yetzer Hara tests him every single day. Tests the person every single day. So a person has to say to themselves, what are my negios? What are the things that drive me to do what I do? How am I nogea bedavar? How am I more likely to behave in a certain way because of my inclinations? And this key to success in spiritual matters is taking your nature and changing it. You know, like food, right? So I like certain types of food. Well, those certain types of foods are not healthy for me to eat. So I have to say, well, yes, that's really what I lean to. I lean towards fried chicken, but get the baked chicken without the skin. It's asking, it's being really reflective and saying, which way do I lean and how do I stop that leaning, because that leaning is either unhealthy or spiritually unhealthy or physically unhealthy. He's proving from Bilam that Bilam was a person who his intent, his leaning was not a good leaning. His goal was to do, was to try to listen more to himself than listen to God. And Rabbi Gamliel learns out from that, that this idea that a person has to think about what are their leanings. And if we have leanings that are not leaning in the right direction, we have to know what they are. And if I know that I lean in the wrong direction, so now what am I going to do to lean in the right direction? So he says a number of things, and one of them is to who he hangs around. If you hang around certain people, your leanings are going to go in one direction. If you hang around other people, your leanings are going to go in other directions. I've said it before. The people in this room are not at OTB this morning. OTB is the off-track betting in New York City, in New York State. It's the state's organization for betting. Right? You're sitting at the Kollel. So whatever your leanings are, you're sitting around people who are going to sharpen your leanings and tune your tuner in the right way. Your day is not going to be the same after all the Torah study that you did this morning. It's not going to be the same. So that's also, if a person has a rabbi and a person follows a rabbi and checks with the rabbi. You know, we laugh sometimes. Why do people ask, Rabbi Kamen ask you silly questions? So, you know, it's being connected to the rabbi. Hey, why do I have to ask every single little thing? The answer is, we're keeping our connection, keeps our tuna. The mechanic took my car this week and drove it to Hashap, Ornament Samuel, very fine person. And she said, you know, you need a wheel alignment because it's shaking. So us staying around the right people is a wheel alignment for us. Our ability to realize what is my leaning. And now what am I going to do to stop the leaning? To understand oneself. To know what their negiyas are. What are they connected to? And sometimes when we are connected to a particular feeling or thought or action or disposition, we cannot make the proper decision. And the goal is for us to make the proper decisions. He says we are like mishuchad. We are bribed. We can't see the truth. I spend a lot of time in restaurants. So I walk in, I see French fries. That's what I see. Now, I have to change that leaning, and I have to see creamed spinach. And I want to tell you that this week I was in a few restaurants in Florida and California, and I did not have French fries. So this is speaking to me. My leaning is to French fries. French fries are unhealthy for me. So I'm using the food analogy to try to think about how does it work spiritually. Because a person has to know themselves. It's a matter of being reflective and saying, I know myself, I understand myself. Not I'm going to go blindly. Because the person who goes blindly is the person who doesn't look. Is there a no left turn sign over here? There was not, by the way, at that Wawa. But I should have realized from the traffic pattern. The traffic is not going the way I was going. So I was going like Bilam. I want to go. I want to curse the Jewish people. I want to do it. I want to make the turn. And so too in matters of the spirit. Yeah, I don't want to get up today and go to davening. Yeah, because I'm tired. I want to take care of myself. I don't want to run to Mincha because, okay, I'll get around it. I'll be a little lenient here. Oh, was it 5.5 hours of waiting? You have to wait 6 hours, is it? So we live in a world that wants to deliver what we think we need. And we are disposed to a world that asks us to, the spiritual world is always to do the wheel alignment. Because ultimately it's the relationship with Hashem that is lasting and makes a difference. Ultimately it's our spiritual victories that are going to be everlasting. And the Torah holds up people like Bilam and says, look at what happened to them. Smart people, intelligent people, capable people, spoke to God. And yet, was, so to speak, bribed by his own self. I can really outsmart God. I can really outsmart God. I can get away with it. So it's a matter of knowing oneself. The way he says it in Hebrew is that the lesson from Bilam is not to be mishubad achar negiyosav, not to be chained by the things that draw us to our particular natures, and to spend a lifetime fixing that nature. And doing it bechabura, doing it with others, doing it around other people, studying things. Limud HaTorah is actually is the best thing. So Limud HaTorah, if we let it seep into us and we say, okay, I'm going to make a conscious decision to know myself better and to stay away from the areas that for me are French fries, in spiritual terms, that's what's going to help us be successful and not be like Bilam. So the person knows, I myself, you know, I'm trying on Friday afternoon. I notice when it's 4 o'clock or it's 8 o'clock, it's the same rush. So I'm trying to say, okay, so how am I going to come to shul 5 minutes early and just sit and chill for a minute? What am I going to do to control that nature of being last minute, of coming right on time? Because that's something that is meaningful. So when a person does that, and they think about it, and they stop and say, hey, what's going on over here? When I walk into Wawa, I see potato chips. I walk into Wawa, I have to look now for diet soda. So spiritually, whatever is in our spiritual plate, davening, learning, Lashon Hara, all the benching properly, all the things. My nature is not to take the bencher. So now go take the bencher and say it slowly. My nature is to garble through davening. We'll say this one paragraph with more kavanah. So if a person is reflective and knows themselves and thinks, that's what they're able to do. In line with this, I think we have a fitting story from Rav Silverstein. It actually is from last week's. And I'm so taken with it that I'm just going to share it. I'm going to share it, you know, with this week. Good Shabbos. Be well. Have a good trip. So nice to see you. Not a problem. Just want to say, so nice to see you. It's a short story. We're actually not going to have the second. We're not going to have the other Shir on davening today. So we're just going to end with this. It's a very powerful story. It's actually from last week's parsha, but I think it's so meaningful that it you know fits along with these two things that we said, because ultimately a person has to realize that if they use the power of prayer, it's a sincere prayer, it's impossible to know what's going to happen later. And this is the story. A moyel gets a call in Israel to come to a bris. He gets a call on one day for the next day. Can you please come to do a bris at my house at 7:30 in the morning? Okay. So he drives up to the house, and normally around the bris there's a lot of commotion. Here it's silent. He wonders if he's at the right house. He knocks at the door. And standing at the door is the mother, and she's holding the child. And he saw he's dealing with people who are not observant. So, does it stop him from wanting to perform the bris milah for this child? The mother says to the moel, it's the eighth day of this child's birth. I wasn't even sure if we were going to have a bris for the child. My husband went to work, and I have to go to get a doctor's appointment. I'm leaving the baby with you. In a half hour, our maid is coming. You can leave the baby with her after you do the bris. The whole story sounds bizarre, doesn't it?
Yes, very.
So I could not make this up.
Very strange.
I don't think the moil could have made this up. So he was a little surprised, and he wasn't sure what to do. But the lady walks out of the house. It's him and the baby. So the moil, he didn't know what to do. He never saw people like this in his life. She leaves, no minion, no food, no party. He says, you know what? I was sent here to do a bris. I'll do the bris. Now, he had to figure out how to do all this all by himself. He's the sandik, he's the moil, he's everything.
Right.
So, he did it. And after he performed the bris, the baby starts to cry and cry and cry. So now here he's holding a baby who just had a bris. No mother, no father. Hear him. The moil starts to cry. Now the moil and the baby are crying. And the moil is saying, Ribbono Shel Olam, take care of this child. Take care of this family. This is Klal Yisrael, he says. These are people. Ribbono Shel Olam, take care of them. The maid comes in. He gives the child to the maid. There's no talk about money, no talk about anything. He walks away, he does his business. 13 years later, there's a telephone call in his house. He picks up the phone and he says, do you remember you gave a bris to my son 13 years ago in this place? It's 13 years, he didn't remember. But then he remembered the story. So the lady says, I have a request for you. I hope you can help us. My son goes to a regular school. He goes to an Israeli public school. We don't know what happened. He went crazy. He went off the wall. Starts to become interested in Judaism. He starts to ask questions. He starts to want to know. He wants to go to a yeshiva. We don't even know what a yeshiva is. We don't know any rabbis. You helped us out once before. Help us again. The guy's like on the other end of the phone. He's like ready to fall off the chair. He got him into a school. And as crazy as they were, they let this kid go to yeshiva. He sees his prayers were answered. He didn't know what to do. So we don't know what to do sometimes. We're in situations. Look, he turned to God. He said, it's bizarre. Help me out over here. Help this kid over here. 13 years later, his prayers were answered. So I say it this week because we didn't learn last week, but I wanted to just say that this is our ability. We come here, we learn things, we get inspired, and we can't take away from, can't take it further. Let's take a lesson from the mile. God, help me out over here. I need you.
What was the title of last week's parsha? Was it Kel Never Funola?
The pasuk it says was Hispalel Moshe Ba'ad Ha'om, where Moshe prayed for the people. So listen, so it's not praying for people; it's praying for ourselves. The koach of tefillah, when it's true, when it's real, is it? God, I got this baby here in the middle of nowhere. What am I going to do with him? He's crying, I'm crying. He channeled his feelings to God and he said, I'm going to turn my spiritual tuna to Hashem. So we too, right, with what the Rosh Yeshiva said about treating others properly, and what Rav Zilberstein said, what Rav Gamliel said about us being able to understand our own negius and how we're all connected. God help us out. You're all we have.